How does one go about milking a snake? It's a dangerous procedure, but for those of us who have been bitten by one, it's a life-saving step in producing anti-venom. This morning, I'm chatting with Associate Professor Brian Fry, the head of the Venom Evolutionary Lab at the University of Queensland, to learn a little bit more about anti-venom production. Brian, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me this morning.
Good morning.
So, I mean, I've seen the videos on, you know, YouTube or, you know, perhaps in a movie, but let's take it right back. How does one actually milk a snake, and does it go wrong?
Well, the short answer is, of course, carefully, because you're near the pointy end. And yes, you know, things do go wrong because, you know, you're near the pointy end. So it's quite a simple procedure in the sense that once you have the snake restrained, whether by hand or the head popping out of the end of a tube, that they're, you know, usually fairly keen to bite. And so it's not something that's going to cause any kind of, you know, degree of stress or harm to the snake themselves. So they bite into a sterile container that has a latex or parafilm covering over it. And then the goodies that you want are squirted off into the inside of that. And then from there, there's a myriad of different processes that can be done, and whether it's, you know, to research the venom or to make the anti-venom. And the anti-venom is really old technology, but it's one of those, if it isn't broken, don't fix it kind of thing. Because to make an anti-venom, you have to take into account that snake venom is extraordinarily complex, but even more concerning is that you can have dramatic differences in the venom composition, even within a single species, across different parts of its range.
You know,
example, one of the snakes that we work with, the Southern Pacific rattlesnake in the deserts and mountains outside of Los Angeles, is a prime example of that, where the ones down in the desert floor absolutely nuke the blood chemistry. Basically, you can kind of think of them as Ebola with fangs. But then the ones just a couple hours drive up into the mountains are hitting the nerve. So that dramatic difference in venom biochemistry means that you can have huge shifts in how well the antivenom works. And this is actually a real problem where, against some of these populations of that particular snake, the antivenom fails. You know, it has absolutely no effect. You know, a mate of mine who's an ER physician, Loma Linda, has had patients die in his table who have received 60 to 70 ampules of antivenom over a 3 to 4 hour period, which is just, you know, an insane amount, and it's had absolutely no effect.
So you mentioning that, you know, obviously venoms are very complex and that there can be, you know, lots of different variants within a species. Does that mean that there's no kind of, like, I don't know, for a lack of a better metaphor, like a penicillin, for example, that kind of helps protect you against a variety of things? Is there like a version of anti-venom that's kind of like a variety, or do you have to go and milk every single specific species of snake to make these specific anti-venoms?
You don't need to milk every specific, but what you need to do is get some good representatives, which can be problematic. You know, so for example, brown snakes and taipans are each other's closest relatives, extraordinarily genetically closely related, morphologically very different, and their venom biochemistry on the surface of it seems to be the same, where they both activate blood clotting using the same kind of components. But even though they have the same basic building blocks in there, just through evolutionary drift and variations due to selection pressure, such as prey type, the anti-venom made against a brown snake doesn't cross-react with that of a taipan, and reciprocally the same thing. So in Australia, we have monovalence against our major types of snakes, which means it's an anti-venom that is specific against one type, like death adder or brown snake or black snake or taipan or tiger snake. And that means that you'll pick up ones with that venom phenotype. So you'd like the tiger snake, for example, cross-reacts with other snakes like the Sydney broadheaded snake. So you pick up some close relatives, but the further away you get from the starting material, the less effective it is. And the advantage of a monovalent is it means you have to use less of it and less chance of a adverse or allergic reaction. So, but Australia also has a polyvalent, which is basically a mixture of all of those monovalents. And that way, if antivenom is in short supply or you're not sure what snake bit the person, that'll kind of mop up anything that it encounters. But these are massive vials. So you're giving a huge amount of a foreign protein to the person. Therefore, the chance of a adverse reaction gets, you know, much higher. But even so, that polyvalent doesn't work against everything in Australia. Like the curl snakes in the genus Suda, which are quite potent in their own regard, are untouched by any of the Australian antivenoms. So we have gaps, but it's one of these things where it's not going to be improved because it costs hundreds of millions of dollars to bring a new drug onto market. And if we change the antivenom formulation, they would have to start with the approval process all over again, and there's just simply not the market to justify that expenditure by CSL.
So is there any kind of scope for changing it then, or is it just there are gaps in the market and that's just how it's going to be?
Yes, no, maybe. One of the things that we're working on and a variety of other groups are working on is repurposing other drugs for their effectiveness, again, you know, other already approved drugs for a new treatment. So, for example, in India, which has a catastrophic problem where over about 1 million people a year get bitten, 50 to 100,000 die, 400,000 end up crippled or destroyed kidneys, versus Australia has a bad year and 2 people die. You know, we don't have a snake problem here. There, you know, antivenom is the true, you know, poverty trap where it may cost several years worth of wages to treat it. So in those particular snakes, the main actions are caused by 2 types of toxins. One is in the metalloprotease enzyme class, and then the other one is in the phospholipase enzyme class. Well, there's 2 already approved drugs that actually neutralize both of those very well. So we're looking at repurposing other drugs that selectively go for that particular protein type. And these are much cheaper than antivenom, and it's actually showing a lot of promise. So there may be, through some lateral thinking, ways to minimize the burden, particularly upon the people who can't afford antivenom, where these repurposed drugs are much, much cheaper.
Brian, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about this morning.
All right, have a lovely day.
That's Associate Professor Brian Fry, the head of the Venom Evolution Lab at the University of Queensland, kind of diving into the details of antivenom production and where we're at in the great big history of medicine with antivenom.